Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide, as you may or may not know by now, to better cricket. We're here to help you whether you're a coach or whether you're a player or whether you're anything to do with cricket at any level of the game. We're going to spend a few minutes chatting about cricket and hopefully helping you out along the way. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garrett. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. Yeah, very good. It's been a bit hairy down here with the old wind battering away at various things, but I've got two magnificent groundsmen out on the pitch at the moment. It probably looks as good as it has done all summer.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, you just look after yourself, Gareth. Batting yourself down when you go outside. You don't want to be blown over, do you?
It's not easy, is it? Batting. I always used to find batting in the wind quite difficult because my bat swing I never used to quite know where it was. I didn't like that feeling of my bat flying around behind me in different angles.
Whereas
a lot of people liked it because it chose which side of the ground they were going to hit it on most because they used to use the wind. But for me, it used to stuff me out of sight.
Secondly, it's the head of cricket performance at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well, yes. A bit blustery down here as well the last few days, but we're back in the sunshine and it all looks like it's going to be good for the next couple of days again.
Fantastic. Well, it's peek behind the curtain in that we do pre-record the show early in the week. We've got one of the biggest games of the year tonight, 2020 Cup match against the League and Cup champions. So I'm very excited for that game. Can't wait for that one to start tonight. And the weather is fantastic. So fingers crossed. Yeah, fingers crossed. By the time you hear this, you'll already know the result, of course, because it will be go out across the national media. International media.
On that playing cricket in the wind, I thought running between the wickets was the difficult thing. Couldn't hear a bloody word people were saying. Didn't know what was going on. Helmet on, whistling through the ears, running people out for fun.
That's your excuse and you're sticking to it. Okay, let's answer some questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website over at pitchvision.com. And the way that it works is we do our best to answer the couple of questions that have been picked from the ones that have come in. And then we pick a winner. And the winner gets a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy and pitchvision.com. Now, if you want to send in your questions to us for future shows, you can do that by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And you can also get us through social media, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. But for now, let's get back to this week's questions. And the first person emailing in is Ravi. Actually, it was from Facebook, but you know what I mean. Ravi says, "Hi, I came to London to play professionally. My question is that I am a huge front foot player, but in my division, the wicket is not rolled, so it doesn't come onto the bat. The wicketkeeper stands up for medium pace bowling, and I keep nicking when I play the cut shot. So how can I score runs?"
Well, it sounds as if you're playing on wickets that are slow, really slow. It sounds as if they're not prepared. And whilst I'm not trying to be overly generic here, having grown up on some wickets like that, my view would be if you're being a front foot player and you're looking to drive, you're finding it difficult to, because there's not enough pace coming onto the bat. So you need to think about how you can utilise that lack of pace. And to me, I would, Sam talked about Owen Morgan setting himself up for certain shots. I would set myself up to basically block anything that's full and try and find a gap and wait for anything to come slightly back of the length. Because if it's so slow, then it generally sits up and I'd be looking to play pull shots. Because a pull shot is probably the best shot that you can play to a ball that has no pace coming onto it. Because we can utilise our body and our rotational inertia best to hit the ball with a pull shot rather than trying to play deft cut shots. It sounds like you've got out to a couple of cut shots or back foot forcing shots where that rotational inertia doesn't always come into play quite so much. So to me, I'd be looking to nudge a nurdle and then whack a ball that is just back of a length, and I'd keep it as simple as that. And it sounds very much like the start of my career, really, playing in village cricket on the Isle of Wight, where where, you know, I played at home, my wickets were good, and I could play a little bit off the front foot, although it was never really my forte. But, you know, waiting for that ball just to be under pitch and then playing a very strong pull shot off of it, and maybe a short arm jab would be something that I'd encourage you to have a go at. Now, how do you practice that? Well, you can practice that off full tosses, coming somebody feeding up from the ground into sort of bail height, I suppose, and you just getting back and pulling it. Somebody who did that brilliantly in international cricket would be worth having a look at would be somebody like Mike Hussey, who did it off of spinners. So when spinners used to just slightly under pitch, and admittedly it was on good wickets, and wickets that came on, but they were slightly under pitch, and he would rock back and play that pull shot through mid wicket, and that's the sort of shot that I'm thinking of, because probably the pace that the ball's coming off of the wicket in your standard of cricket on those pitches that you've described to us would be similar to a spinner, with ball coming off a spinner's pace in Test match cricket. So it's a good shot to watch. Have a look at Mike Hussey playing spin and some of those fantastic pull shots he played, and see if you can replicate that in your practice before taking it into a game. But when it's those types of wickets, it's very difficult to drive unless the ball is all the way up there, because obviously it sticks in the wicket a little bit, but we can use that to our advantage. As I used to, I reckon I got into first team cricket by playing some really ugly second team club cricket years ago, where I'd just wait for it to be slightly under pitch and then bop it over mid wicket.
Have we got any other options for him, Lavers? I guess, you know, power hitting maybe, or going, or specifically trying to go over the top?
Well, I think that's the next stage, and it obviously depends on your skill set and how confident or competent you are at hitting over the top. But the next step from that would be driving on the floor will continue to be difficult as you play through innings on those kind of surfaces. So once you get yourself set and you feel like you've got the confidence to do it, the next thing to do is really commit to that drive and commit to hitting it over the top. You would imagine that if you are playing that type of game, the opposition may start to post a couple of men back, so you might get deep backwards square and a deep mid wicket just for that pull shot.
And that will free up an opponent. It's over in the trees.
You can at Bender, can't you?
Yeah, great.
There's every chance they might post some men back, and as Gareth says, if you've got time, you've got the power, and you're good enough at the shot, then you still whack it for six. Don't let it disrupt your thinking. Obviously, you've got the option to take a few more ones if you start to spread the field a little bit about that. But then having the ability to hit straight, generally over the top is going to be pretty straight or a little bit leg side because of the lack of the pace you've got in the pitch. Hitting over extra cover in those kind of directions becomes quite tricky. So you're going to end up dragging the ball a little bit leg side of where you might initially intend to aim. But again, committing to that next phase. So rather than just playing through a format that's obviously getting you so far, you want to have, what do I do if something happens? What do I do if they set a field back? What do they do? I do if they're good enough to not drop one short? And that would be your next step for me, is can I have that ability to just get one up and over the top and push another man back in another area? And then we can, again, think about those rotating those ones and in between times when we don't get a bad ball.
And it must be, as a pro, playing in the leagues as a pro, is it brings its own pressure, doesn't it? Especially if you find you've come across a problem which you haven't got the answer to immediately. It's very easy for people to assume, well, you know, if you're playing as a pro, you must be able to do everything great all the time. But actually, especially if you come, you know, thousands of miles and you face a problem which you would never face at home, it adds pressure to you then, doesn't it? It makes you, oh my God, you know, they're paying me to be here and I don't know how to score any runs all of a sudden. So it's sort of, you get in a loop then, don't you?
Yeah. It's hard, mate. It's hard. And I remember back to my time in South Africa. You know, nobody helps you out over there because you're right, they expect you, they're buying your runs, aren't they? Really, and it's your job to help everybody else, and so it can be a little bit lonely if you're facing alien conditions and you haven't quite got the game. But equally, I think one of the best ways to endear yourself to your teammates is to ask, you know, to say, well, I don't know much about this environment. I've not grown up here. You guys have. So could you give me a couple of bits of tips, or would you like to work with me on a couple of things? Because if I get it right, then I'm going to to score big runs for you. And I'm sure if you put it in that context that people would be fairly happy to help you. But sometimes that little bit of humility, even as an overseas player, can open up things for you and your teammates that might not be possible if you hold it in and you don't ask those questions. It's certainly not a vulnerable position to ask that question, even if you're the overseas player or not.
Oh, that's really good. Endearing yourself to the team or the club or whoever else is around the game when you're an overseas pro is such a useful thing for you and a nice thing for them, isn't it? So massively important, and I guess you're there to learn a bit as well. So hopefully these people teach you a few things if you can go along that route from Gareth.
I think certainly the best overseas players that I've had at my counties when I've had them, because it's exactly the same pressure for these guys that come over, the likes of, you know, even if they're world-class players, the likes of Ponton and Smith. I can remember Matthew Hayden joining Hampshire years ago when he'd played a little bit in the one-day side in particular for Australia in the early 90s and then came over and played for us before he really established himself in the test side. And he very much used it as a learning opportunity to help him become a more rounded player that could take his game home and away from Australia and do well. And he was the first person to ask questions of even somebody like me that hadn't played a great deal of top cricket, but he would ask questions to the likes of Malcolm Marshall, obviously, but also, you know, Mark Nicholas's, John Ailings, who was a good county player, Kevin James's. He was always asking us questions because he wanted to make sure that he came back in the future as a fantastic Australian test player who was adept and adaptable to play in English conditions. And unfortunately, Hampshire did a great job for him in helping him do that.
It's very rare, isn't it, that you have, if you are respectful and you are humble, it's very rare that doesn't work. You know, most people like those traits in someone. So, and it's something which is relatively easy to do, even if you are in a position where you're getting paid to do a job and you're the only person.
No, exactly. I mean, they are good. They're good things, and I'm not sure that I always got them right by any stretch of the imagination. But certainly, the best players that I've been around, of which Matthew Hayden was a great example of a good one, as a very young guy coming into county cricket in the early 90s, he displayed a hell of a lot of that, and it was fantastic to be around him. But his questioning definitely helped his quest to be as good a player as he possibly could be. And I know that when he used to go to India, which was obviously completely alien conditions to him and an alien condition to most Australian players who had a very poor record out in India until the mid-1990s, he would ask questions of all of the great players over in India as well, just trying to broaden his understanding of playing in different conditions. So if it's good enough for somebody like Matt Hayden, then it's certainly good enough for me and probably yourself as well.
Next question is from Parwinder. Parwinder says, what kind of bowling machine do you recommend for club cricket?
Well, I'm a bit biased on this one, actually, because there's an increasing range of bowling machines that are now coming onto the market. And, you know, we've spoken a lot about the value of bowling machines, but the big value of bowling machines is how you utilise them, really, and making sure that you're really specific about the way that you want to practice, whether it be grooving or whether it be challenging yourself to slow pace or extreme pace or whatever. But be really, really understand what you're going to get out of this practice and what you're getting the machine in for before you make that investment, because they're not cheap. You know, they're not cheap bits of kit. So the bowler machines are the most, I suppose, the most obvious ones that are on the market, and we've got three or four of them here at school, and they serve a really good purpose for us. And the basic machine we utilise to groove shots as best as possible and to increase the volume of balls that people are facing. But, you know, I go back to utilising them really well. The question now for me is how can companies make their bowling machines better? And a company there's a bowling machine that's come out now, which is called Cricketack, which is being franchised and by the guys that do Crazy Catch and Flix Pitch. And it's a fantastic machine because it allows you to use cricket balls with that bowling machine, which is obviously completely different to most bowling machines that we face. And one of my biggest challenges with bowling machines is the fact that you don't get seam movement from a bowling machine, because obviously the bowling machine balls are smooth or dimpled and you don't get the same reaction. And obviously seam movement's the most dangerous type of movement that you can have in the main, because it happens so late on a ball's journey towards a batter. So the fact that we can use cricket balls with Crick Attack is fantastic, and I know that a number of England coaches have been really impressed with it and are actually getting some in as well. But we're getting one here at school. I'm doing a bit of ambassadorial stuff for the company as well, because to be able to face a cricket ball, I think, is advantageous when it comes to practice, just purely because the seam comes into play and that can make the ball swing and deviate differently. You know, we talked about cross seamers earlier. You can actually practice facing cross seamers, can't you, with a seam ball. And the other thing that I like about Crick Attack is the fact that you can see the ball going into the machine and follow the track of the ball rather than it disappearing into a hole in the top of the machine and then reappearing out of another hole, which I think, again, whilst it's not, you know, absolutely spot on with what a bowler does and what you see with a bowler, it's really good practice for you to be able to see the ball, because with most bowlers we can see the ball as the people go up into the gather and then through to point of delivery. So have a look at Crick Attack. That would be my point of difference one, really, which would make it even more specific than the bowler ones. But equally, look at your budgets and look how you want to utilise the bowling machine that you want to get into your club, and choose appropriately.
The bowler machines work. We've worked at Pitch Vision. We've worked with Bowler for a long time, for many years. So if you're thinking about sort of next step, apart from a machine that can fire a cricket ball out in roughly the same place every time, if you're looking for next step as well, like tying it into video analysis, tying it into different types of deliveries, which can all be tracked, obviously, with Pitch Vision, then yeah, the bowler machines have the trigger that works with them, and then you can have, you know, you've got every single ball tracked then and what pace it was and where it pitched, and you can then go back over your videos and look at your technique on different shots and different times. And, you know, that's, you know, to put the Pitch Vision hat on for a minute, that increases the power that you have with the bowling machine, because it just automates all that hard work that you have to do after the session, sort of going through the videos and everything, because it's all done for you. It's all chopped into nice sort of 5-second videos or whatever it is. So that's quite a nice little thing that works with the bowling machines. Lavers, in terms of sort of what type of machine to use, you've got the different, you've got ones with the legs, haven't you? And you've got ones that come on a stand and ones that bowl at different speeds and things like that. Apart from sort of monetary concerns, you know, is there any sort of things where you say, well, look, you've got to have this, really, otherwise, you know, it's too much of a saving. You might be saving money, but you're not actually getting what you want out of it, feature wise. I mean,
yeah, there's going to be a bit of a trade off, isn't there? There are certain things you can spend a lot of money on, and you get a load back from that investment. There are other areas where you can cut corners, but in cutting the corners, you're still spending a good chunk of money and you're actually not getting something that's going to do the job you're looking for. So I guess you've got to look at who you're going to be bowling at, who you're going to be using with. Is it something that's primarily for junior club players, senior club players? What level of club cricket are you looking at? What surface are you going to be using them on? So there's a number of variables you should probably consider there. And from that, you've probably got a bit of an idea of what you're going to be looking at. The bowler is kind of has been the benchmark, hasn't it, for years? And then Crick Attack, when I think I'm right in saying, probably comes in a little bit above bowler, doesn't it, in terms of cost, Gareth? You'll probably know that. But again, it's offering something slightly different. So don't be put off by cost sometimes. Obviously, if you're a club and you have an X amount of, like a finite amount of money, then you can't go beyond that. Then fair enough, that's understandable. But if there's something that is a bit out of your reach that you can, that's going to offer you something that's really, really suited to what your needs are, then it might be worth looking at. Is there a way you can finance it to really tick all your boxes rather than only getting something that's doing half a job and is still draining a lot of your resources? some of the things you can get now, I know there are a lot of these pace man bowling machines which are a little bit cheaper, a little bit more portable. Not quite so robust in their structure, but they're quite effective if you're looking for some volume. One of the things I'd say is sometimes be a little bit wary of what you do buy in terms of the structure of it, because sometimes the lighter machines you can get these days work with a lighter ball because they're not quite so sturdy. So if you're happy with a lighter ball which feels different off the bat and doesn't quite have the same contact, and invariably you don't have to really time it quite so well to get a good outcome, then they'll be fine. But if you want something to give a fairly realistic out feeling off the bat, then you probably want to go for a machine that uses a usual weight ball. And obviously, if you want a really realistic answer, then you want to go to something that's using a cricket ball, such as the top end with the one that Gareth is talking about there. Or obviously, bowler wise, you can look with a Merlin again, but you're looking at a hell of a lot of money when you go towards that kind of end of the market. So yeah, make a list of the things you want to use it for, and then just have a look at what they offer, because there are, I would say, at least a dozen different options of bowling machine out on the market. So definitely doing your homework, definitely think about what you want from your machine.
Yeah, and I'd also say remember the limits of it. You know, there are limits to what you can do with the bowling machine. So it's a nice thing for a club to say that they have, and often you'll get batsmen who absolutely love it, don't you? And you can't get them off it. But the other question is, looking at a bigger picture, could I use that money for something which would get more use? So it depends how much you're spending and what you're going to specifically use it for. But you do want to go in with the sort of use case already in mind, don't you? Rather than just going, we need a bowling machine just because, everyone's got one these days, so we better just get one.
Yeah, if you look at buying a bowling machine and you're thinking, right, that's going to cost us £2,000, say, give or take, and we're at a cricket club and we've got two nets, well, a bowling machine, what it is definitely going to do, it's going to use up a lot of space in terms of session. You might get a lot of value out of it, and it might be very good for individuals, but it's going to be one at a time, two at a time using it. If you're in a position where you've got 15 people at training and you want more people more active in terms of batting and bowling, then it might be worth saving that money and trying to invest in another net or another training space, which is going to offer you more in the long run. Think big picture about it and work out what the best way to spend your money is going to be. Probably going to be buy something from Pitch Vision, I'd imagine, David.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, it's a bit more money, but it helps the batsmen and the bowlers, of course. So, you've got the best of both worlds there. So, look at all the options is what I'm saying. I mean, obviously, I'm Pitch Vision biased, but definitely, at the very least, if you're coming from it from a not Pitch Vision biased side of things, then make sure you look at all the options rather than just think, well, it must be a bowling machine or nothing. And that is all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we go, we are going to do one more thing, which is decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions that are available to win the prize this week are Ravi's question about not knowing what to do to score runs as a pro, and Paul Winder's question about bowling machines. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Ravi, because not knowing how to score runs as a pro was something that plagued me for about 20 years. So I'm going to go with that one. And I think, the biggest bit of advice that I can give is to use the experience in a foreign country of people that you're playing with. And as we talked about earlier, that humility that you display there will obviously benefit your game, but I think will really endear yourself to your teammates as well.
Congratulations, Ravi. Hope that will help you out. And Gareth, if someone else was listening to the show who also felt that they could get some help and also win that prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can also get us in other ways. Of course, pitchvision.com has a messaging platform, so you can get in touch with us that way. Just do head over to pitchvision.com and search for us there. You can follow us, you can friend us, you can do all that fun social stuff. And you can also do it on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter @pitchvisionacad. You can listen to the show every week. It's, there's sort of two parts to it. The first part is the part that you're listening to at the moment, which is available for free, and you can get that by going to any podcast app and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy and tapping on subscribe. That'll sort that one out for you. And there's also a bit of bonus content that we always put out there on the Pitch Vision website. If you go over to pitchvision.com and look for the Pitch Vision Academy account, if you follow us on there, you can get the bonus content. That's also available for free, but exclusively on pitchvision.com. Speaking of going to pitchvision.com, you can do that as well. You can get all the old shows on there, all the way back, right back to episode one, but I wouldn't bother listening to that one. It's not very good. We sort of started to get going around about episode 150, I reckon. so we're doing all right now. The first 150 are the hardest, as I always say. But anyway, if you want to start from the beginning, you can certainly do that. You can get all the show notes and download the shows and do whatever you want over there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fella.
Cheers, guys.